From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We're seeing in the last week revenue spike. We saw they're coming in stronger than what we had estimated, to the tune of $300 to $500 million. I think we're about $400 million right now.
The money doesn't belong to the government. The money belongs to the taxpayers. They earned it. It's their money. And when we take taxpayers' money, we have an obligation to maximize the productivity of that dollar.
We have another year of budgets now coming up, right? So we'll be back. You know, we're on fire. We're very happy that we got this money back, but we know that there's still a hill to climb, actually probably a mountain to climb right now.
That is Joanne Guthrie-Gard, mother of a girl who has epilepsy, talking about the state restoring funding for programs in the current budget year and the fight that still lies ahead. First, we heard from Dan Long, one of Illinois' nonpartisan budget gurus, talking about new revenue projections, and Governor Bruce Rauner talking about government spending. We'll talk about that, new working groups on the governor's policy ideas and spending plan, and we'll remember former Governor Dan Walker, who died this week at the age of 92. I'm Brian Mackey. Bill Wheelhouse is away. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS, and our guest is Kurt Erickson, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises, which has newspapers in Bloomington, Decatur, the Quad Cities, Carbondale. Kurt, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
All right. First up, let's talk about COGFA. This is the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, the nonpartisan budget research arm of the General Assembly. Apparently, the fiscal gurus there went on a vision quest, and lo, unto them did appear $500 million in new tax collections. Do I have that right, Amanda?
You do have that right, and this is approximate. It's not finalized, but it was nonetheless an opening for Governor Bruce Rauner to restore these cuts, and that's important for a couple of reasons. On one hand, there has been all of this, you know, public pressure from individuals like that mother, Ms. Guthrie-Gard, who had been to the Capitol time and time again advocating for restoration of these cuts. They had been particularly harsh for many organizations' layoffs immediately because they weren't spread out over an entire year. They had come with only 3 months left in the fiscal year, so you got a pretty sizable chunk of cut coming in a really that had to work over a really short period of time, and that affected everything from autism programs, epileptic, a teen reach program, tobacco quit line. Those are kind of some that we often hear about. And so with his action, Governor Rauner restored that. He said, hey, COGFA says we've got more money coming in. We can do that. But it does not only kind of appease those votes, it also is good for legislators. They had largely been taken off guard, it appears, when on just before Easter, that Good Friday, these cuts came down, whereas the Rauner administration, and he has some backing actually from the Democratic legislative leaders, say they'd warned that more cuts could be on the way. It nonetheless was done in a fashion that took both these groups, the parents and legislators, by surprise. So they were taking a lot of heat. So this kind of saves face for Rauner as he goes into those fiscal negotiations for next year, which could be much harsher. And he needs to have, in some ways at least, cooperation and good relationships with legislators as he does this. So that it solves that problem.
Sure, sure. Charlie, it's not unusual for the state to kind of discover that maybe the revenue projections were off partway through the budget.
Yeah, and discover, it makes it sound like, oh, this money was hidden and we didn't see it. If you think about it, the budget projections, the current budget was put together almost a year ago. And so people are looking in their crystal ball and trying to predict, what's the economy going to be like 8, 10, 12 months from now? What's the employment going to be like? What's the corporate tax receipts going to be like? And so they make their best guess. And in recent years, the guesses have been pretty conservative, as opposed to back in my day, there were times when the official revenue estimate would be, I guess the fair word would be to say it was bloated to be able to cover all the spending they wanted to do.
Optimistic.
Yeah, I guess optimistic is a more charitable word, but as it turned out, the money is coming in at a higher level than what was anticipated almost a year ago. The same thing happened last fiscal year, in fact. And from what I've read, some of it is attributed to the fact that people who had large capital gains in 2014 are reporting them. And this surge occurred in April, of course, when income tax returns are due. Your final payments have to be made in April. And so, as Dan Long said, we were anticipating that at the end of the fiscal year, the actual collections from the income tax are going to be somewhere between $300 and $500 million higher than what we thought they would be a year ago. And as I say, this is not uncommon, but in a sense, it's a real benefit, a godsend for, I would say, for Rauner and for the legislature, because it enables the money to be freed up to pay for some of these programs that are absolutely critical in people's lives.
Yeah, well,
the question remains, though, how these programs are going to fare. As I noted, in cases, people have already been laid off. I mean, speaking with that woman, Joanne Guthrie Gard, there and some other legislators, it's like whiplash. One second it's funded, one second it isn't. And it's all of the uncertainty that we've heard so often from politicians that businesses don't like. And a lot of these social service agencies are, in fact, businesses. And it's important to point out that while the $26 million in state grants that had suddenly been cut off have been restored, other cuts that were part of this fiscal year 15 deal and to close a $1.6 billion hole, those aren't going anywhere. So it's not as if the extra $500 million goes and cuts off that 0.6 of cuts, and there had been 2.25% across the board to state agencies. We're seeing, as a result of that, fewer students getting monetary award program grants or MAP grants, for example. It's not like that's going to change. The governor's office has said that they will not proceed with any further cuts, but there won't be any additional restorations either. And you get very much that the administration is trying to send the message that we did some of this and we're not terrible. Guys, you know, see, we care. And yet, we were not pressured into this. It's just because there was a windfall, and don't make it think that we're going to back down on negotiations going forward. But, when public
well, and another way to look at it is that this allows the Rauner administration to save face. Those $26 million in cuts were seen by a lot of Democrats as, and I suspect some Republicans too, came as a surprise. They thought they had a deal with the governor, and suddenly he cuts $26 million more. His ability to be able to free up that money again might help restore some level of trust between the executive and legislative branches.
Kurt, you were trying to get in there.
Well, the governor's office has its own budget forecasting, and for them to apparently have completely missed this $500 million magic money windfall is just mind-boggling. So either they didn't realize that there would be this kind of blowback coming from the, you know, the autism program, or they're trying to employ some kind of chaos theory where they're, you know, they're trying to keep everybody, you know, off their game and, you know, making state government just a real mess. You know, it's one or the other, I think.
Or perhaps a combination of both.
Yeah, a combination of both.
I mean, well, and Kurt, just, I mean, we've seen this governor, he came into office promising to streamline government, to make it more efficient, run it more like a business, right? I mean, he seems...
Shake up.
Yeah, whatever cliched phrase you want to use at this point. I mean, he seems, you know, maybe he doesn't want to be the guy who's out there kicking, you know, we heard, Amanda and I heard from a woman who said, you know, one of these autism programs teaches things like how to wave. I mean, these are very basic life skills that are being, that are helping out parents who maybe don't have anywhere else to turn to try and deal with children who would otherwise be, you know, have a lot of disabilities in life. And you wonder, you know, the governor doesn't want to be seen as, okay, maybe he doesn't want to be seen as kicking those people out of programs, but he still does want to be seen as a tough guy and somebody who can really make the hard decisions about government.
You know, I really think that what is, and I could be wrong, of course, I'm not in on these meetings, but a lot of this is really more for internal posturing. It goes back to that trust with legislators, how upset the backlash had been, not just outside, but from within, in talks with legislators who he is still new and has made an effort to meet with them, to go out to the movies, to dine at the governor's mansion. I think that that's why we're seeing, in particular, these $26 million in cuts. The rest of it's, you know, going to continue to pay the backlog of bills or what have you. But that's just my guess, because it's clear when you hear the governor that he doesn't appear all that afraid of making those cuts. He says he doesn't want to make them. He doesn't like them. He wants to be compassionate. But compassion can't happen until the state gets its act together. And he repeats that no matter what. You know what I mean? Right. And I heard, for example, he was in the Capitol the other day, the USS Illinois. There was a display. He gave it brief comments in the Capitol Rotunda and was stopped by some individuals going forward that, you know, just kind of tried to talk to him. And a lady said, please, please, please don't cut. And he said, my turnaround agenda passes. We'll see. You know, I mean, it's just kind of this automatic fallback of turnaround agenda pass, then can be cuts. He goes to that position no matter what.
Well, can we, Kurt, can you talk a little bit about that? So we heard that these working groups are beginning to meet this week. You know, they're really starting to get more into the next budget year appropriations talks. And, you know, the governor really seems intent on tying his policy agenda, changing labor laws so that you can have so-called right to work in certain localities, things like that, to his budget agenda.
Well, yeah, the governor talked on Wednesday that they've got these groups meeting, these working groups meeting behind closed doors. The governor's office will not, or would not last night at least, tell us who's on these working groups, what the working groups are, when they meet. But since then, I've been able to at least figure out that there are seven of them. There's one for pension reform, one for unemployment insurance, another for budget implementation, another for a capital plan, another called transforming government, taxpayer protection, and economic growth. So there's a mix of members from each of the four caucuses and people from the governor's office behind closed doors trying to come up with some kind of workable bill that could, you know, be introduced and get passed. Or on the other hand, there are members of the caucus working to kill some of those proposals that Rauner wants to see go through. So it's kind of a secret process at this point, and someday the governor, who's all for transparency, will unveil these fixes to make our state a better place.
Well, they're all, the governors are for transparency, right, Kurt? And at least until they get into office,
yes.
Then maybe not so much.
Yes.
Amanda, I mean, what are, do you get a sense, are these things tied together? How are Democrats responding to this idea that, you know, vote for my budget, or if you want me to support your budget, you know, that doesn't make all these draconian cuts that he's suggesting, then, hey, let's pass my so-called turnaround agenda.
Well, this is the new world, and we really have to wait and see how it all shakes out slash down, if you, whatever word you want to use there. It is abundantly clear that Rauner is a true believer in his plan, and it gets back to, he is the CEO, he'd been the boss, he wants his way, and he may have learned a bit of a lesson in the fiscal year 15 negotiations and fallout, but this is something different, and he has been very clear that he sees the quote-unquote crisis that Illinois is in as an opportunity for getting his way. And when you speak with legislators that are adamant that they want a revenue increase and that they, because they don't want cuts, they want to be able to continue to pay for services that they believe the people need and depend on and that government should provide, that they're going to be fighting tooth and nail for that, and he's going to be fighting tooth and nail for his agenda. So that's where you get all the predictions that session may well go into overtime, and these working groups, you know, play nice now, understand where everybody is at, but it very well could come to a head later on.
So, Charlie, I mean, some of these policies that the governor has that seem designed or at least would have the effect of weakening labor unions and changing that sort of policy throughout the state, changing the system of lawsuits, what activists for that call tort reform. You know, the governor is pushing this plan. I remember you talking a lot in the campaign about the challenges of a business leader coming in and having to work with a board of directors that numbers 177 members. You know, where does this leave us?
I think Amanda summed it up pretty well a minute ago when she said this is a whole new world. And in my experience, and I go back to the days of Richard Ogilvie, we've never had a governor who at least publicly was willing to hold hostage the most vulnerable people in our society to get his way on a purely ideological agenda. Because I look at this visceral hatred that he has for unions as being almost pathological. And he's said that until I get my way on destroying unions, I'm not going to support any programs to help the most vulnerable people in our society. I mean, that's probably harsh, but that's the way it's coming down. Now, maybe this is just a bargaining ploy, and maybe he's putting on this tough game face, and maybe in the end he'll reach some reasonable compromise. But if the signs, to me, point that it's more likely he's, as you said, he's a true believer in all this stuff, and he's willing to sacrifice anybody and anything to get his way.
Amanda, when you had your one-on-one with Governor Rauner, you asked him about that directly. I believe your question was, you know, it was you were citing a young man who was a ward of the state, and, you know, part of the cuts that have been proposed is that people who are wards of the state would be shut off from state services the moment they turn 18, whereas we currently kind of ease them into adulthood through age 21. And you asked the governor, is this young man a bargaining chip? And what did he say to you about that?
He said no. He brushed it off pretty darn quickly, but then really gave no evidence to the contrary. Kind of continued into the same regular spiel, and so it's a lot of in some ways you could say the doublespeak that you often hear from politicians. Maybe he doesn't view it as that with an individual person. Again, he has made many a contribution to charitable causes and says that he's a believer in youth and wants to support that and be compassionate. And yet, It very much appears to be that child and many of these other cuts are bargaining chips because that's what he says is needed. The only way that he will consider any sort of revenue increase, at least outside of paying for infrastructure, that he says is kind of an exception and outside, but for restoring any cuts, it is all hinged on getting his way on this very large turnaround agenda, really. I mean, those seven working groups, it's not like they're working on just one little bill. I mean, those are seven working groups that in many ways are tackling several big items, and he may have some success with some of them. So, say, unemployment insurance, maybe there's room for an agreement or a compromise there. But the others, I think, could be far more difficult. I mean, term limits, legislators have very much wanted to stand in the way of limiting how long they can serve in the General Assembly. That'll be a tough one. Right to work zones, I don't know how that could ever happen in this General Assembly with just Democrats and Republicans who have these allegiances toward unions.
Well, Kurt, you mentioned that, I think it was in your story, you mentioned how one of the groups or some of the groups dealing with issues, traditional labor management issues like workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, they were working to get an agreed bill. And an agreed bill is a process that has existed for many years in which representatives of the business community, representatives of organized labor would sit down and negotiate. And they would come up with an agreed upon plan, which the General Assembly would then rubber stamp.
Yeah, that seems to be like one of the potentially doable issues, unemployment insurance or workers' comp.
Mm-hmm.
So those could be doable.
But how do you get an agreed bill on some of these other issues?
Right.
You're not going to.
The format for it, exactly.
You know, the governor may say, I'm going to declare victory because I got 3 of 8 things and hopefully we'll do better next year. Or he'll say, we're going to be here in August and tough luck for your summer vacation.
Well, Amanda, you had mentioned a few minutes ago about infrastructure being one of the areas where the governor might be open to some sort of revenue. A big capital bill, as it's known, generally requires a new revenue stream. In the past, that's been increases in license plate fees. Can you talk a little bit about IDOT, I gather, is having a listening tour. They're going around the state to figure out where the biggest needs are. And that roadshow came to Springfield this week.
That roadshow did, and Governor Rauner made his appearance. He'd come in and left on his Harley and used himself as an example, saying too much road, especially after this harsh winter, of course, potholes, and there need to be some repairs. He rode over it on his Harley and didn't like it. Of course, that takes money, and that was not talked about at all during the listening tour. It was pretty brief and almost, you know, funny you hear the leader say, we want to spend most of the time hearing from you, talking to you, and yet there really isn't much opportunity for for questions. Yeah. It was the same old, you hear from the leaders, and then people did have an opportunity to turn in a listening tour comment card that talked about, you know, what are your priorities, be it community benefits, system benefits, do you care about safety, freight delivery, congestion, what have you. So that's part of it. You had the new IDOT acting secretary and Governor Rauner both saying that they want to stop this kind of start and then heave forward and then halt again system of funding infrastructure. They want it to be consistent going forward and to find some sort of revenue stream that can continually pay for construction and road and bridge upgrades. But again, the really significant portion of that is that there was no talk about how they would pay for it.
Because it apparently it doesn't need to be transparent. But back in January and February, they talked about a coalition of business and labor groups, which both support a big capital plan, were trying to figure out if there's support for an increase in the gas tax and a reduction in the sales tax on motor fuel, some kind of combination there that would help finance not a $31 billion capital plan, but more of a long-term capital plan that the governor is talking about. And as soon as that kind of popped out and went public, everybody said, "Oh no! We're not, you know, supporting anything." And so that's out there. I think that's going to be in the mix in the end. And again, that's another one of those potentially doable things because you've got business and labor on board with it.
Coming up, former Illinois Governor Dan Walker has died. This is State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
This is State Week. Our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Lee Enterprises' Kurt Erickson. I'm Brian Mackey. This week, we got word that former Governor Dan Walker had died. He was a one-term governor running the state from 1973 to 77 and spent much of his energy fighting the Democratic establishment. At that time, that meant Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley. He's also among the Illinois governors who spent time in federal prison, though he has the distinction of going to the pen for crimes he committed out of office. This week, we dug into the WUIS archives to find some vintage tape of Walker.
Some time back, I heard a political leader tell this body that it took guts to raise taxes. Well, I think it takes guts to hold the line on taxes and spending. It takes guts to resist the pressures of the special interest groups. And the people of Illinois are very proud of those members of both parties who had the guts to do just that.
Nowhere in the United States of America am I aware of any situation where you have grown men standing around and waiting as supplicants for one man to tell him what office to run for, to tell him what chair to sit in. And you and I know, everyone knows, the price that you pay for going through that charade. You pay the price of your independence. You yield up your independence to one man, to one boss. And that is wrong. It's wrong for politics, and it's wrong for government.
Well, the score is now Walker 1, Daley 1. It was the Daley machine that caused my loss in this election. There is absolutely no question about that.
Be positive. Go forward. And I've always believed that, and I try to practice it. I lost that when I went to prison. I lost that. And I went down into the depths of real depths. And there was a big, tall water tower. And I thought many a time about, as I walked beneath it, I'd look up there and say, well, why not just climb that ladder and step off into nothing? You don't have to jump, you just step off. And nothing swallows you up. And one day I saw the face of Jesus right before me when I closed my eyes like that. There he was. And he gave me peace. Peace. And so I finally found peace in prison.
Former Governor Dan Walker, who died this week. Charlie Wheeler, you actually covered Governor Walker during his time in office. Do you have any, I guess, what is your overall assessment? I understand he had a pretty contentious relationship with the press.
Yeah, and it's kind of difficult to not speak totally kindly of people who've passed away. But I thought Walker was pretty much a phony. He was someone who portrayed himself as being a man of the people when, in fact, he was a corporate lawyer. He put on a bandana and a blue work shirt and work boots and walked from Brookport on the Ohio River sporadically off and on up to South Beloit near the Wisconsin border. And he sold himself as being something that I did not think he was. He assailed machine politics, but he played a lot of that game when he was in the General Assembly. He tried to coerce legislators to vote his way on different issues using projects, pork projects, as his leverage. He cut deals with some, what would you say, with some insiders. So he was not really the reformer. He came about at a time when there was a lot of antagonism among Democrats against the Daley machine. And a lot of it stemmed from the 1968 Democratic Convention. Walker rose to prominence as the chair of a commission that studied the causes of those riots, and he referred to them as a police riot, which cemented his enmity with Mayor Daley. And so he gets elected, and he's put into the position of having to continue to be confrontational, which really limited his ability to get anything done. And I think in later years, he himself conceded that had he been willing to go a little further towards meeting Daley and not continually challenging him on anything and everything, he might have done better as a governor and maybe even as a political leader. In fact, there were some people who quipped that Daley would have been glad to support Walker for president just to get him out of Springfield.
Yeah, and I was reading a commentator this week saying that, you know, they blamed Walker for the 26 years of Republican rule that followed because they believe that, you know, his antagonism with Daley might have resulted in Jim Thompson eventually becoming governor and putting a Republican lock
on
the state.
Well, as a matter of fact, Mike Madigan was one of the people who said that when Blagojevich ran a second time and somebody asked him about having a primary challenge against Blagojevich, and he said the last time we had a Democratic primary and ousted an incumbent governor, we had 26 years of Republicans.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Kurt Erickson of Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of this show on WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.